Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Wednesday, April 26, 2022. 2023, I'm so sorry. This is On Air Daily News for Wednesday, April 26, 2023. And I'm Naeem Latif. And we are joining a live White House press conference with the President of the Republic of South Korea, who is visiting the United States. And President Joe Biden has an opportunity to confirm efforts to obtain and maintain peace. So let's join them at the White House now.
Please be seated. Well, Mr. President, it's good to see you again, my friend. We've met several times over the last year, and each time we have deepened our nation's partnership and for the benefit, I think, of both our peoples. Today's no exception. Our nation's relationship has been a great success story. The alliance formed in war and has flourished in peace. Seemingly every day, we've launched new areas of cooperation on cyber, strategic technologies, space, democracy, and all the areas that matter most to our future. Because of its core, our alliance is about building a better future for all of our people. And there's no better example than our economic relationship and partnership, which is delivering incredible benefits to both our nations. Through the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, we're advancing economic growth grounded in high standards for our workers, for the environment, and for communities throughout the region. We're standing together against economic influence being leveraged in coercive ways. And since I took office, Korean companies have invested more than $100 billion in the United States, driving innovation and spurring good new jobs for Americans and Korean workers. Our mutual defense treaty is ironclad, and that includes our commitment to extended deterrence and that includes the nuclear threat, the nuclear deterrent. They're particularly important in the face of DPRK's increased threats and a blatant violation of U.S. sanctions. At the same time, we continue to seek serious and substantial diplomatic breakthroughs with the DPRK to bolster stability on the peninsula, reduce the threat of proliferation, and address our humanitarian and human rights concerns for the people of the DPRK. The Republic of Korea and the United States are working together, including through our trilateral cooperation with Japan, to ensure the future of the Indo-Pacific is free, is open, prosperous, and secure. I want to thank you again, Mr. President, for your political courage and personal commitment to diplomacy with Japan. I've worked on these issues for a long time, and I can tell you it makes an enormous difference when we all pull together. I also welcome and support your administration's new Indo-Pacific strategy. It's a strategy that affirms how aligned our two nations are and our visions of the region and how similar they are. Today, we discussed our work together on promoting peace and stability in the Taiwan Straits, ensuring freedom of navigation in the South China Sea and beyond. I also affirmed our shared commitment. We together shared our firm shared commitment to stand with the people of Ukraine against Russia's brutal assault on their freedom, their territorial integrity, and democracy. And the Republic of Korea's strong support for Ukraine is important because Russia's flagrant violation of international law matters to nations everywhere in the world, not just in Europe. When it comes right down to it, it's about what you believe, what you stand for, what kind of future you want for your children and grandchildren. And right now, I believe the world is at an inflection point. The choices we make today I believe are going to determine the direction of our world and the future of our kids for decades to come. That's why this partnership is so important, Mr. President, because we share the same values, the same vision. And I greatly appreciate, Mr. President, that the Republic of Korea co-chaired the second summit on democracies last month, and they will host the third summit on for democracies. We both understand that our democracies and our people are our greatest source of strength, and working together, they make our nation stronger and more effective. From tracking the climate crisis and strengthening our effort to fight it and strengthening global health, no two countries are better suited to meet the challenges ahead than the Republic of Korea and the United States. I want to thank you again, Mr. President, for your friendship, your partnership, and all you've done to help build a future of shared strength and success. The floor is yours, Mr. President.
Hear his words interpreted through an interpreter.
President Biden, thank you for your special and warm hospitality. I am very pleased to be making a state visit to the United States during this meaningful year that marks the 70th anniversary of the ROC-U.S. alliance. Our two countries have overcome challenges and crises during the past 70 years based on the deep roots of freedom and democracy, building a value alliance that is strong, resilient, and sustainable. We are now being threatened by an unprecedented poly crisis. The ROC-U.S. alliance is jointly overcoming this crisis, also coming from North Korea, as a righteous alliance that contributes to world peace and prosperity. We will further expand the depth and denotation of the ROC-U.S. Global Comprehensive Strategic Partnership and march forward to the future. Today, President Biden and myself engaged in constructive dialogue to discuss ways to materialize this shared vision. The outcome of our dialogue is well outlined in the joint statement adopted today. The first key outcome is extended deterrence. Sustainable peace on the Korean Peninsula does not happen automatically. Our two leaders have decided to significantly strengthen extended deterrence of our two countries against North Korea's nuclear and missile threats so that we can achieve peace through the superiority of overwhelming forces and not a false peace based on the goodwill of the other side. Such a will and commitment is captured in the Washington Declaration. President Biden has reaffirmed his ironclad commitment to extended deterrence towards the Republic of Korea. Our two countries have agreed to immediate bilateral presidential consultations in the event of North Korea's nuclear attack and promised to respond swiftly, overwhelmingly, and decisively using the full force of the alliance, including the United States nuclear weapons. Our two countries have agreed to establish a nuclear consultative group to map out a specific plan to operate the new extended deterrence system. Now, our two countries will share information on nuclear and strategic weapon operations plans in response to North Korea's provocations and have regular consultations on ways to plan and execute joint operations that combine Korea's state-of-the-art conventional forces with U.S.'s nuclear capabilities, the results of which will be reported to the leaders of our two countries on a regular basis. In addition, our two countries have agreed to further advance tabletop exercises against a potential nuclear crisis. In addition, deployment of the United States strategic assets to the Korean Peninsula will be made constantly and routinely. President Biden and I will continue to cooperate to strengthen extended deterrence between our two countries based on our historical and concrete agreement reached during our summit. Second, our two leaders have agreed to further strengthen the strategic partnership in economic security, which is directly related to the national economies of our two countries. President Biden and I welcomed the expansion of our firm's bilateral mutual investment in advanced technology, including semiconductors, electric vehicles, and batteries. President Biden has said that no special support and considerations will be spared for Korean companies' investment and business activities in particular. We have agreed to consult and coordinate closely so that the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS and Science Act can further strengthen supply chain cooperation between the two countries in advanced technology. Furthermore, we plan on ramping up partnerships in cutting-edge technology. We have agreed to establish a dialogue for next-generation emerging and core technology between the U.S. National Security Council and the Korea Office of National Security pertaining to chips, batteries, biotechnology, quantum science, and other cutting-edge technologies with the aim of promoting joint R&D and experts exchange. We have also adopted a separate joint statement for strengthening cooperation in the rapidly emerging quantum science and technology domain. President Biden and I have also agreed to get the ball rolling on discussions about expanding our alliance into cyber and space by applying the Mutual Defense Treaty in cyberspace and space as well. We have also agreed that the strategic cybersecurity cooperation framework adopted this time around will serve as the foundation on which we address cyber threats together and boost cooperation in information sharing, collection, and analysis. Space is another area that shows great promise for cooperation between our two countries. During my time here, I was able to visit the NASA Goddard Space Center. President Biden welcomed the establishment of CASA, and we have agreed to promote cooperation between CASA and NASA. We have also agreed to accelerate discussions on reaching a reciprocal defense procurement agreement, which is equivalent to an FTA in terms of national defense. Meanwhile, President Biden and I have agreed to promote exchange between the future generations of our two countries. To this end, we have launched the U.S. ROK Special Exchange Initiative for Youths. In celebration of the 70th anniversary of the ROK-US alliance this year, our two countries plan to invest a total of $60 million to support exchanges between 2,023 youths majoring in STEM, humanities, and social sciences. This also includes the largest Fulbright program to date, which will provide scholarships for 200 students. Last but not least, President Biden and I have agreed that South Korea and the United States, as key partners in achieving stability and building peace in the Indo-Pacific region, will put our heads together as we implement our Indo-Pacific strategies to strengthen our cooperation in addressing regional and global challenges. In particular, President Biden expressed strong support for efforts made by the Korean government to normalize Korea-Japan relations. And we have agreed to continue our efforts in strengthening Korea-U.S.-Japan trilateral cooperation. Furthermore, we reaffirmed that the use of force to take the lives of innocent people, an example of which would be Russia's invasion of Ukraine, can in no circumstances whatsoever be justified. In that sense, we agreed to continue our cooperation and efforts alongside the international community to support Ukraine. During this meeting, we also discussed plans through which our two countries can take a leadership role in addressing global challenges such as climate change, international development, and energy and food security. I am delighted that through today's meeting, we've opened up a new chapter for the next 70 years of the ROK-US alliance. I hope President Biden and I, with the support of people in our two countries, can fully deliver on the blueprint that we have mapped out today with the aim of our founded in the reaffirmation of the value of freedom and our universal values. Thank you.
Now we're going to take some questions. First question is from Courtney of the Los Angeles Times.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your top economic priority has been to build up U.S. domestic manufacturing in competition with China. But your rules against expanding chip manufacturing in China is hurting South Korean companies that rely heavily on Beijing. are you damaging a key ally in the competition with China to help your domestic politics ahead of the election? And one for President Yoon. There have been concerns since last year that North Korea will soon be conducting its seventh nuclear test amid growing domestic support in your country for your own nuclear weapons. Meanwhile, Russia has suggested it could send its latest weapons to North Korea if South Korea sends lethal aid to Ukraine. How do you seek to manage the North Korea risk amid obligations to Ukraine and NATO? Thank you.
Let me respond to your questions first. My desire to increase U.S. manufacturing and jobs in America is not about China. I'm not concerned about China. Remember, America invented semiconductors. We invented it. We used to have 40% of the market. And we decided that what we're going to do over the past, I don't know how many decades, we decided that it was going to be cheaper to export jobs and import product. And along came the pandemic. And the pandemic taught us that we used to have, as I said, 40% of the market just some years ago. Now it's down to 10%. And again, we invented the supercomputer. So I decided to go out and see what we could do to increase our hold on the market once again. And so what I did was I went around the country, as well as an additional passing the CHIPS and Science Act. I, in fact, visited the countries around the world. And two significant South Korean companies decided they were going to invest billions of dollars in chip manufacturing in the United States. It wasn't designed to hurt China. It was designed so we didn't have to worry about whether or not we had access to semiconductors. For example, during the pandemic, what happened was all of a sudden everybody started to learn the phrase supply chain. A year ago, no one knew what the hell anybody was talking about when he said supply chain. But now they all know. And we lost access to these semiconductors, in which new automobiles in the United States need 30,000 of them just to build a new automobile. And we didn't have them. So we started to invest here. And what happened was when we encouraged the investment through the CHIPS and Science Act, and now we have enormous investment in the United States, over $200 billion in long-term investment in semiconductors. And we're rebuilding the economy of the United States with those semiconductors. It's not designed to hurt China. The only thing I did say with regard to China, there are certain extremely sophisticated semiconductors that we have built that are useful for nuclear and or other weapon systems. Those we are not selling, whether we're not exporting to China or anyone else. And so that's the context in which this has all occurred. In the meantime, we're creating thousands of jobs and bringing back a sense of pride and dignity to so many towns in the country where all of a sudden over the last 3 decades we found out that factory that hired had 600 people shut down. The soul of that community was lost. And so I made sure when the semiconductors were coming back that they were not just going to go to the coast, they'd be all over the country. And so we have a significant field of dreams in outside of in Ohio, outside of Columbus, we're in Texas, we're in Arizona, anyway, all over the country. So it's not viewed to hurt anyone else. We are providing access to those semiconductors. We're a supply chain you can count on. But we are not. We are not going to sit back and be in a position where we don't have access to those semiconductors. We are not going to be a place where we're the end of that line. We're the beginning of it. And it's generating significant economic growth in America and not hurting anybody. And by the way, it's creating jobs in South Korea. It's creating jobs in South Korea, not just with SK, but anyway, with Samsung and other industries. So I think it's a win-win.
With regard to your question, let me provide my answer. Korea and the U.S., based on its Washington Declaration, our two countries have agreed to strengthen extended deterrence, and the implementation level is different from the past. First of all, we have an NCG, Nuclear Consultative Group, that has been launched that will implement discussions and actions, and we will hold regular meetings and consultations under NCG. We will share information on mutual nuclear assets and intelligence, and we will jointly plan responses and also jointly plan exercises and drills and implementation plans. So all of these will be strengthened and specified under the Nuclear Consultative Group.
We want to customize our response against North Korea's nuclear threat based on extended deterrence. And in the process of achieving this goal, any concerns that Koreans may have against North Korean nuclear weapons will be relieved, I believe. If nuclear weapons are used, our two countries will strengthen our response in a swift manner. Any further questions to me? Please. Reporter Won from One NTN. I have two questions for you. With regard to extended deterrence, the NCG that has been formed, how will Korea function under NCG? Any kind of nuclear-equipped nuclear assets will be in function? And to President Biden, Korea is to maintain the NPT, and it is to strengthen extended deterrence, correct? So based on your view, do you think this is enough to guard Korea against the North Korean nuclear threat? Thank you very much.
Well, let me address your question about the activities of the NCG. We are going to be sharing information, and we are going to be acting jointly. That is the key. I can't talk to the specifics right now about what type of information and what type of specific activities we will be conducting. But, however, under the nuclear umbrella, our extended deterrence was a lot lower. So right now, it's an unprecedented expansion and strengthening of the extended deterrence strategy under the Washington Declaration, which will create the NCG. The implementation and the response at this level has never thus far been this strong. So this is a new level of extended deterrence, much stronger, that I can say with confidence.
The response that I would give you is that extended deterrence means that we are having more consultation with whatever actions to be contemplated or taken. And we made it really very, very clear. Any the ROK has repeatedly reformed its confirmed his commitment to the non-proliferation treaty. And the Washington Declaration is a prudent step to reinforce extended deterrence and respond to advancing DPRK nuclear threat. Look, nuclear attack by North Korea against the United States or its allies or partisans, or partners, is unacceptable and will result in the end of whatever regime were to take such an action. And it's about strengthening deterrence in response to the DPRK's escalatory behavior and to deal in complete consultation. And, you know, the idea that I have absolute authority as commander-in-chief and the sole authority to use the nuclear weapon, but, you know, what the declaration means is that we're going to make every effort to consult with our allies when it's appropriate, if any action is so called for. Certainly, we've talked about this and some other things today, but the bottom line here is there's even closer cooperation, closer consultation, and we're not going to be stationing nuclear weapons on the peninsula, but we will have visits, port visits with nuclear submarines and things like that. We are not walking away from that. My turn to ask a question. I think the next question is Mary Bruce, ABC.
Thank you, Mr. President. You recently launched your reelection campaign. You've said questions about your age are legitimate. And your response is always, just watch me. But the country is watching. And recent polling shows that 70% of Americans, including a majority of Democrats, believe you shouldn't run again. What do you say to them? What do you say to those Americans who are watching and aren't convinced? You've said you can beat Trump again. Do you think you're the only one?
I may not be the only one, but I know him well, and I know the danger he presents to our democracy. And we've been down this road before. And with regard to age, you know, and polling data. I notice the polling data I keep hearing about is that I'm between 42 and 46% favorable rating, et cetera. And, but everybody running for reelection in this time has been in the same position. There's nothing new about that. You're making it sound like Biden's really underwater. Number one. Number two, when the same polling data asks whether they think what kind of job I've done, it gets overwhelmingly positive results from 58% thinking everything from the CHIPS Act and all the things we've done. You know, we've created, like I said, we've created 12 million new jobs. We created 800,000 manufacturing jobs. We have economic growth moving. We're in a situation where the climate, we've invested more money and more help in dealing with the climate crisis than any nation in the world. And so things are moving. And the reason I'm running again is there's a job to finish. The other thing is that, look, you know, think about what I inherited when I got elected. I inherited a nation in overwhelming debt at the time, number one, in the hole for the 4 years that he was president. I inherited a nation that had a serious loss of credibility around the world as America first. And, you know, the first meeting I attended the G7, I said, America's back. And one of the world leaders looked and said, for how long? For how long? There's a great concern about the United States being able to lead the free world. And we're doing that again. And those same polls you look at, you take a look at the polls, they're saying whether I pull together NATO and the European Union as well as Asian partners, I think we have. But there's more to do. And with regard to age, I can't even say, I guess how old I am, I can't even say the number. It doesn't register with me. And but the only thing I can say is that one of the things that people are going to find out, they're going to see a race, and they're going to judge whether or not I have it or don't have it. I respect them taking a hard look at it. I take a hard look at it as well. I took a hard look at it before I decided to run. And I feel good. I feel excited about the prospects. And I think we're on the verge of really turning the corner in a way we haven't in a long time. I know you're tired of hearing me say we're in an inflection point, but we really are. What happens in the next 2, 3, 4 years is going to determine what the next 3, 4 decades look like. And I have never been more optimistic in my life about the possibility of the United States.
To be clear, though, you just said I know him well. Did Donald Trump's decision to run affect yours? Would you be running if he wasn't?
Yeah, I think I still would be running if he wasn't. I do know him well. He's not hard to know, as you know. You know him well, too. The question is whether or not, look, there's more to finish the job. We have an opportunity to put ourselves in a position where we are economically and politically secure for a long time. Look, we continue to have, and you don't like me hearing me saying it, there's still a contest between autocracies and democracies. And we're the leading democracy in the world. And it's something I know a fair amount about, something I care about, and something that I have found a willingness from an awful lot of our allies and friends to follow. So I think that, you know, we have to finish the job, nail it down.
And that was President Joe Biden at the White House in a live press conference with South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol and President Biden reiterating U.S. support for the Republic of South Korea and reiterating support for peace efforts and also reaffirming his intention to run again in election against challenger once again, Donald Trump. Two senior men who have served as president who are in their eighth decade of life taking on the challenge of leading a nation. What will the White House look like over the next 4 years after the 2024 election? Voters will decide. You've been listening to On Air News for Wednesday, April 26, 2023. I'm Naima Latif. Join us again tomorrow, 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern. Feel free to call in with your good news, 515-605-9749. Again, that's 515-605-9749. And until tomorrow, enjoy the rest of your day.